Welcome to the Starting Over Stronger Show, where you'll find help and hope for your divorce survival and recovery. Divorce well, live well.
Welcome back to the Starting Over Stronger Show, and thank you for joining me again this week for more in the reading of the new memoir, Starting Over Stronger, Finding a Pathway Out of Codependency to Create a New Life of Peace. It is my pleasure to be reading my memoir to you here on the show. And of course, as you know, you can also order your own paperback copy so you can go back through it again now, having heard it from my own voice, my own emotion, my own reading of the book. You can go back through it again, and now you can mark things and really dig in and think about the things that you want to apply to your life. We're getting toward the end of my personal story and into more of, over the coming weeks, the strategy of journaling that I want to share with you through this book. And so you're going to be able to start implementing some of that into your own life so that you can begin to make the changes that you desire to make in your stuck places. And this week we're going to be reading chapter 7, and we're going to get through to not fully through chapter 7, but through a good portion of it, and then we'll finish it up next week. And actually, I kind of mapped it out a little bit this week, and it looks like we're going to be reading this book right up through December 29th. So every Wednesday now through the end of the year. And then it just worked out perfectly. It's going to come to an end with about the same amount of reading time each week on December 29th, or whatever that last Wednesday is in December. Then we will talk about what 2023 for the Starting Over Stronger podcast. So let's go ahead now and get started reading chapter 7, Rising Out of the Fog, ages 40 to 43. To this point, I had been living in a fog. That avoidant personality I had developed was either the precursor or yet another symptom of this fog, F-O-G, which is an acronym for fear, obligation, and guilt. Fear of anything and everything, the past, the present, the future, him, myself, life. Obligation to stay, to go along, to get along, to do the right thing, to be the perfect wife, the good Christian woman that would never consider divorce. Guilt about doing anything differently, anything for myself, anything that might upset anyone for any reason. Fog is such a perfect analogy because when you are in a literal fog, you cannot see what is right in front of you. It's disorienting. You can get lost in it. You can make a wreck of things without even knowing it. In my toxic relationships, I could not see the control and manipulation and gaslighting, the lack of true love, until I could. Because once you see it, you cannot unsee it. But it can take a painfully long time for the fog to clear enough to see it. Home of no hope. Even with all the newfound hope rising to the surface within me, hope dwindled in other ways. The 40-year awakening that had been ushered into my life through my daughter's cry for help left almost no hope for saving the marriage. Even after yet another return on promises, because they were once again empty. The more the fog cleared, the more I could see that my efforts at change were not yielding the desired shifts. I was on this upward trajectory of understanding myself and relationships, but I was desperate for Stan to want to be on that journey with me. The brutal reality was that he could not or would not join me on that path. I needed to learn how to stop apologizing for outgrowing someone who had the chance, the choice, to grow with me. Slowly, oh so slowly, I was getting there. We had talked about separation back in 2006 when the first infidelity, that I knew of anyway, had happened. But no one moved out. I had nowhere to go, and he refused to leave. Though the goal was still restoration, in the summer of 2013, while Callie was safely elsewhere getting the help and hope we believed she was getting, I felt the freedom to prioritize myself, if only for that short season. My mother had recently moved back from Texas to Missouri. That summer, the pain of staying the same finally outweighed the pain of change. The pressing struggles with our daughter shifted to open different possibilities. I was forever changed for the better as I was awakened to the reality of my situation and the part I was playing in it my whole life. Yet, I have rarely felt good about this part of my awakening, given the pain and sorrow surrounding us, especially Callie, at that time. Almost 10 years later, Callie still expresses deep hurt, even anger, certainly betrayal and abandonment, for much of what transpired during this time. She has yet to see value in what she endured at that place. This place we thought would bring our family healing and hope. And this hurts my heart so much. There is nothing I can do to change how Callie feels about this. The really hard pill to swallow is that without things transpiring the way they did, I may very well still be stuck in a toxic marriage that was killing me inside and not good for my children to view as normal. So while Callie was in the program, I moved to Harrisonville with my mom. As a full-time homemaker, I had no other feasible alternatives. Besides, I was hopelessly devoted to building emotional bridges within my nuclear family as well. A part of me thought this move would create opportunity to maybe finally connect with my mom. During the day, I ran back and forth from Harrisonville to Blue Springs to see my son and run errands. Evenings were spent reading, journaling, praying, and trying to engage with my mom. Being separated from my spouse was hard enough. A nice, long break, signaling an ending of the years of misery, was made exponentially worse by being thrust back into the childhood trauma of being emotionally abandoned by the one woman I wanted more than anything to connect with. When I tried to share feelings and needs with the one woman on earth a girl should be able to share her heart with, even at 40 years old, the pain of her emotional unavailability became intense. Over and over again, for the whole 3 months I was staying in her home, this pain was simmering beneath the surface. We got along fine. There was never any outward animosity, for her anyway, and outwardly with me. But what I was feeling inside was another story entirely. So today I talked with Stan. I thought maybe we could work things out, but he just seems to prefer to argue about everything. Every word I say is wrong in his mind. I would try to relate to her. She would manage to mutter, scarcely taking her eyes off whatever television program she had escaped into. She wasn't that interested in TV. It wasn't about me interrupting her. She just had nothing to say and preferred to say nothing. She could not or would not relate emotionally, at least with me. I used to think she couldn't at all, but I have many times over the years seen and heard her do so with friends from church or lifelong friends. Just not me. Maybe not with any of her children. Did you feel this way with Daddy? I continued to try. Long silence, as if she needed to think about it. I don't know. I don't think about it that much. As if just a few years after his death would have erased the nearly 50 years that I know, without a doubt, she spent feeling exactly what I just described. This dialogue would go on for as long as I could take it, a few times a week, and would end with me eventually getting up and saying goodnight on my way down the hall, as if nothing was wrong. I got so much more out of my alone time than trying to get blood out of the turnip that was my mother's heart for her child, just like my entire childhood. It was likely that, at least in part, it was that guttural pain which drove me right back to the man who caused me just as much pain. The emotional abandonment of my mother and physical abuse of my father was one thing. I was a child and had no choice. It's another thing entirely, as a grown adult, to keep going back to a man you chose. A choice you could make differently many times over, including now. But I didn't make a different choice. I did it again. They say we go back an average of 7 times before we finally say no more for the final time. If I count our dating years, I can think of 4 times that I seriously considered it. Apparently 4 was not going to be enough for me. I still could not see that his promises to change were empty. I wanted so much for them to be true. I wanted the man I fell in love with, my happily ever after. Did he exist? Looking back now, from outside the fog of fear, obligation, and guilt, I don't honestly know how I could not have seen the emptiness of the promises. But that's the thing about living in the fog of toxic, verbally and emotionally abusive relationships. If you never get out long enough for the fog to clear up, you will never have the ability to see it for what it is. My PTSD brain only offers vague recall, but as I would later read, my journals from this time confirm that it was only a matter of weeks before things went right back to exactly how they were before. There I was again, walking on eggshells to avoid another go-around on the drama roller coaster. Before I knew it, another 3 years of my life was in the rearview mirror. Years filled with much of the same. Stay busy and avoid reality. Busy family life, baseball summers, and this time all the lasts of 2 kids in high school instead of all their firsts. Navigating this crazy life with an emotionally vulnerable teenage girl was especially challenging. This girl was a walking example of why staying for the kids is not the answer. I can only partially blame the fear of what divorce would do to the kids. I also had the fear of how I would provide for myself or my kids. The fear of how quickly I would be replaced with a part-time mother of whom I had no choice. And the fear that I could lose the opportunity to be there for my kids 100% of the time, as they had always known. Outrageous statements and moments of anger like, go right ahead and file for divorce. You have no way to provide for the kids. Do you really think they'll give you custody? Were taken as credible threats because I didn't know any better. And I was not ready to put my life in the hands of a judge who didn't even know us. In staying, though, I still also carried fear. Fear of how I was daily allowing our marriage to teach my kids everything I would never want them to endure. As children, certainly not what I would ever want them to see as normal or repeat in their own adult relationships. Trepidation about avoiding the next big upset. Unwittingly preventing my kids from having the stability and peace their healthy development required. 3 more years filled with fear had come and gone, and nothing had changed for the better. Conditions had only continued to dissolve. But I won't do that. In 2016, I was 10 years older, 10 years wiser, and a lifetime more healed than I was the first time I had said I wanted Stan to move out. I had finally found the strength to say I would no longer do this thing we were calling marriage. It was no longer about my ability to tolerate mistreatment, and it was not even about the chaotic cycle of pain and hope. It was now about my awareness that doing the same cycle on wash, rinse, repeat again and again, expecting different results every time around, was literally going to lead to my insanity. On June 1st, 2016, the clear and long-awaited sign happened. I will never forget 6116. This was not the here's your sign kind of sign, although I needed one of those about a million times before. This was the answer to a long-prayed prayer that I cried out one final time that fateful day. It was another scene like the thousands that came before. I was being pursued for yet another foolish and ignorant argument that only leads to strife. This time I had learned how to apply 2 Timothy 2:23 to these situations. Now, I knew how God's word affected my decision to not get involved in quarreling, but instead to pursue peace, which always required a time out or boundary. Stan followed me from one room to another. He denied my repeated appeals for him to listen to my thoughts or give time for emotions to regulate. When he wanted to have an argument, he was like a lung looking for oxygen. There were no other options. Agree with him or argue. And on this first day of June in 2016, I held my new boundary. I would not engage in verbal warfare with him. I firmly stated my boundary of not engaging when emotions had escalated. Then, loudly enough to be heard over his ranting, I stated I would be leaving the house for a while. The way I voiced this boundary was a quote that still rings in my ears, as I would repeat it 1,000 times. I love you too much to argue. The shift in the energy in the room was palpable. This would not be like all the other times. The next moment was one for the record books. One of the few moments where time stands still and the words spoken in this time-space continuum echo for years. Words indeed that I will never forget as long as I live. Him. I'm glad you don't want to argue. I don't have to take this verbal abuse. Silence. Disbelief. Me. Verbal. You're serious, aren't you? Me again. Okay, I'm going. I have nothing else to say right now. I walked out that door, jumped into my 2009 Honda CRV, and drove to my solace, Burr Oak Woods. I found the nearest trail and set out with great fervor, tears already flowing. This was my safe place, my space to let it all out. The trees would listen to me if no one else would. I would scream it out, cry it out, and pray it out, time and time again. Over the years, this was my refuge. Here I was again, crying out to God when I got the sign I had been waiting forever for. For months, if not years, I had been praying for God to release me from my vows. I thought and talked many times about ending the misery that was this marriage, with counselors and friends, but one thing always held me back. I needed to know I had done everything I could do. I needed assurance from God Himself that it was okay for me to end it. When I walked that aisle, I meant the words I spoke. I had given my all for 21 years to live up to the words I pledged the day I said, I do. I did not take that vow lightly. I truly believed for all 21 of those years, divorce was never going to be the answer, no matter what. I had to know beyond the shadow of a doubt that I had done all I could do. No stone left unturned. I literally wanted to hear from God Himself that He and I were in agreement that this marriage was over. A big ask. Then, that day in the woods on 6/1/16, reeling from the accusation by my verbal abuser of being verbally abusive, I cried out to God yet again. God, how could He possibly believe that I am verbally abusive to Him? How can we ever make this right if He actually believes that? What more can I do, God? If He thinks I'm verbally abusive to Him when it is actually the exact opposite, how can this ever be remedied? As clear as if it were an audible voice, I heard God say it. You have done enough. So clearly and assuredly, these words fell on me from above. I turned around and scanned the trail ahead and behind me and into the woods on either side. I stopped, sat down on a nearby rock. I was stunned, breathless. Who had spoken that? I knew, but yet I was in disbelief. My life would never be the same. I had never experienced anything so clear in all my years of praying, and I knew without a single doubt, instantaneously, it was the voice of God. My long-awaited prayer was answered. The energy shifted again. Everything in me felt wholly different, like I was changed. A Saul to Paul kind of moment, just like in the Bible. When Saul of Tarsus became the Apostle Paul, an ardent missionary to an unbelieving world and a fine example of faithful service in the face of fierce persecution. On this revolutionary day in the woods in Blue Springs, Barb became Annie. The official name change was yet to come, another year or so later, but this was the moment the transformation took place. I now had the one thing I could not move forward without, God's release from my vows. I suddenly had so much to figure out. This was a moment I wasn't sure would ever come, so I was far from prepared to act on it. I finished my hike with God, processing a million thoughts with Him, and then headed back home. Stan was gone, so I moved swiftly to take my first clear and confident steps of God-ordained autonomy and emotional freedom. I still love you too much to argue. We had two bedrooms on our upstairs level, which had been the kids' bedrooms, then Stan's office, and a spare room once Callie moved out and Colin relocated to the basement. This spare bedroom was now my new home. I was not physically or financially able to move out, nor did I think that was a smart move. I had a lot to figure out, but I no longer had to keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. This was the day the insanity ended. The marriage was over. I was 2 semesters away from my degree completion, and my son was 2 years away from high school graduation. That was the mark I had hoped to stay in place for, long enough to give Colin an intact family unit without a major interruption to his family life. So instead of moving out, I was moving on up, upstairs. In under 1 hour, I took every stitch of clothing and every item I owned out of the shared walk-in closet, my dresser, my side of the master bathroom cabinets, my things in the shower, and I even grabbed my pillow, still in its master bed matching pillowcase. I hauled it all, one armload after another, all by myself, up to my new home. Then I waited. I knew a hard conversation had to happen. I usually dreaded these encounters. I deliberated long and hard every time on how Stan was going to react to whatever I needed to share. This time, I was resolute. I didn't care what he said or thought. I was done. He probably would not believe me. That's okay. Time would tell the truth. It was going to be different this time. He would see. I get that right now, he would have no way of knowing how much had changed within me on my fateful walk that morning with God. It was not something I would attempt to explain. A lot had died in me on that fateful 6/1/16 walk. And one of the most important deaths was the death of needing Stan's approval, agreement, or understanding of my decisions. A shift had happened, but I knew the shift was entirely within me. Nothing else was any different, especially to him, than every other time on the roller coaster of our marriage. One would think that when Stan came back to half the master bedroom emptied, he would know something had changed. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I explained, I'm done. I will not live like this any longer. I mean it this time. I stood my ground and made sure he understood that a line had been crossed, with his accusation of verbal abuse. I did not explain that. It was that comment. I just said a line had been crossed that could not be uncrossed. No apology, explanation, or retraction would change the outcome. I was done. This marriage is over. My solution for now is an in-home separation. I need to finish my college degree and be here in the home for Colin until he graduates, but this marriage is over. The protests began immediately. No apologies or appeals to make things right, only arguments about why I was wrong to make this decision. Thoughtless. The protests were numerous and played on a loop for weeks and months to come. With my newfound clarity and God-given emotional freedom, I was strangely unaffected. He could throw anything at me, good or bad, and it was like water off a duck's back. Him. How is that going to work? Me. I don't know that yet. I will figure it out as I go. Him. This is not okay. You can't just move upstairs. Me. Yes, I can. You do you. I will do me. Him. We need to go back to counseling and work on this. Me. I hear you. I just feel differently. I am in counseling and will continue, but not with you. Him. You love this, don't you? Put the man in his place. Me. I still love you too much to argue. Him. Colin is going to know something is wrong. Me. Stan. Come on now. Colin already knows something is wrong. So does Callie. They both have for most of their teenage lives. That's why Callie has not wanted to live here for years. They may actually enjoy the reprieve if you will just let me be up here and accept my decision. Him. I am not going to be treated like this in my own home. Me. You're welcome to leave. Or just leave me alone, if that feels like a better solution for you. I am going to stay right here, in this upstairs room, until I am ready for whatever my next steps will be, which I am actively working on determining. Him. I get it. I do. You have every right to be upset. I will change. I promise. Me. I know I do. Change if you want. That's up to you. Him. I am going to move out. I can't live like roommates. Me. That is your choice. Do what you feel is best for you. Him. I've been reading this book. Cue the tears and handy book about shame clutched in his hands in front of him. And I get what it is that I'm doing wrong. I don't blame you for feeling the way you do about how I have acted. I will go to counseling. Me. Again, thank you. That is really great. And I hope you do go to counseling. It will certainly help you and any future relationships you have. I just can't make any promises about it saving this marriage. You need to go for you. Him. You need to move out. You're the one that decided to move upstairs. You can go get an apartment or something. This isn't working. Me. That won't work for me right now. I will let you know when and what I decide to do. Over and over again, the roller coaster of his emotions roared day in and day out. I never knew from one day to the next if I would get Jekyll or Hyde. Thankfully, I had learned the fine art of communication often referred to as gray rock. Gray rock is a method of communication that can be employed with difficult people in which you intentionally disengage emotionally. No matter what the difficult person says or does, you remain calm and neutral, responding only with brief, informative, friendly, and firm responses. See Biff, B-I-F-F, by Bill Eddy, a helpful resource for communication during difficult encounters and breakups. Both Gray Rock and Biff came fairly natural once I had been given God's release. I had tried to use them both for many long months before with a lot of confusion and failure. From that transformative day forward, I could no longer be rattled by Stan. He could say anything, and it would not cause an emotional reaction from me. It felt amazing. I could literally feel a sense of personal power rising within me. It was a foreign feeling, but it felt good. Detachment. What a gift. This new roller coaster of I'll do better and you need to leave would be the new norm for many months. I was able to stay emotionally disengaged and even learn to physically withdraw from him in order to be at peace much of the time. I kept busy with my college coursework and my little desk nook in the upstairs bedroom. I spent as much time with Colin as I could, away from the house and in my room. I journaled more than ever. I had a lot of time to myself for exploring my thoughts and feelings. I began to enjoy a little taste of the joy and peace of removing myself from a toxic relationship by living in that space on my own. I continued to assert that Stan could do what he wanted and needed, and I would be doing the same. If he truly saw error in his ways and wanted to work on restoration, he should do so. I would never discourage that. In fact, I maintained that the marriage we had was over, but over the course of time, I began to offer more. I learned how to explain in detail that this marriage dying was a good death because it was diseased and damaged beyond repair. It was something that needed to die. I began to offer, and did so repeatedly, that the former marriage being dead would not have to be the end. I began instead to invite Stan to create a new marriage with me that would be nothing like the old if he truly wanted to make things right. Pursue me. Dedicate yourself to healing. Rise up to that level of healing I have achieved in the months, actually years, that you have chosen not to join me on this path of growth. I will continue working on myself as well. I'll be upstairs, finishing my degree, working on me, getting my ducks in a row. And if you really want me and this marriage, I am open to receiving a new Stan. I was willing to see if he would really change this time. On one thing, I did insist. The three-part marriage rescue plan. Part of Stan's attempts to save the marriage included a renewed commitment to church. September 11th fell on a Sunday that year, so there was a special tribute as part of the service. We went to lunch at a pizza place in downtown Lee's Summit. On and around the September 11th anniversary, Stan tended to be more pensive, more emotional. This would rarely turn out well for us, so I was pleasantly surprised when he once again appealed to save the marriage rather than lashing out at me in more anger like he normally did around this time of year. Instead of vague promises, he laid out a specific plan. He would go to counseling, but not just any counseling, not the counselor of his choice, and not the same old weekly talk therapy we had done off and on for 10 years. This time, he asked who I wanted him to go see. He wanted to know how could we structure the marriage repair to address everything appropriately in a way that I felt assured about to try to rebuild a new marriage. I was cautiously optimistic. The only counselor I believed could appropriately address our issues without having to start all over was the counselor I had been seeing for years. I would not risk putting our lives again into the hands of another mental health professional who did not know how to recognize and properly address the dynamics of the narcissistic, empathic relationship. My counselor, Chris, was a well-educated doctorate-level Christian therapist. He did not take sides, but he understood personality disorders. Of that, I was certain. He was the one to confirm I was on the right track when I shared the book Stop Caretaking the Borderliner Narcissist, How to End the Drama and Get On with Life by Margalies Feldstad. He picked up his very own copy from my desk that he was also reading at the exact same time, though I had found it through other means. I firmly explained to Stan that I was not willing to try anyone else, that we must start immediately, and that Stan must commit to Chris's recommendations for us, seeing it all the way through completely until he released us. If he quit or tried to control the process in any way, that was it. I would be done. If we were putting our marriage in this counselor's hands, we would both have to fully trust him and do everything he recommended until he released us if we wanted to recreate a new marriage. This personality disorder informed therapist was the first trauma informed counselor I had ever worked with. By this time, I had spent countless hours relating the situations within our marriage to him. Chris knew us better than anyone, aside from Sheila, and Stan had long ago refused to trust Sheila, certain that she was taking my side. From my extensive study and prayer, I knew we were both dealing with trauma, and there was a likely undiagnosed personality disorder. I had already begun doing EMDR on my own and would continue. I knew that Chris would recommend the same for Stan. Chris helped me understand how physical abuse, spiritual abuse, and verbal, emotional, and psychological abuse all had one thing in common. The victim often struggles with a myriad of confusing self-worth, codependence, and victim mindset issues, rendering them to a state of learned helplessness. Chris made many book recommendations over the years, and each one changed my life in its own way. I still attribute much of my awakening and healing to my work with Chris. Stan had seen Chris a few times previously as well, so he knew a little about him, and for whatever reason, he was willing to trust him, in spite of the fact that I had been seeing him on my own previous to this. Normally, that would not be the case. I believe it only ever was the case because he truly knew he had no other option. The marriage would end if he did not try this. Until that day, I did not think Stan would ever go back to counseling and commit to a long-term healing process, let alone with a counselor he could easily see as mine. That was a pipe dream or another empty promise. But here we were. He had said the words over and over again for about 3 months because I had heard it so many times before, I thought, go ahead on your own. I was not willing to open my heart back up again. On September 11th, Stan finally asked in a way that meant something different. So I decided to see it through. On my terms, for complete closure, come what may. Stan knew he had issues, and we both had suspected it could have to do with the fact that he had suffered 10 diagnosed concussions in his lifetime. The last three were severe enough to cause temporary amnesia. After a fall in our garage a few years previous, we learned Stan had suffered yet another concussion. At the hospital, the doctor took me out in the hallway for a cautionary conversation between just the doctor and the patient's wife. The area of impact is the emotional center of the brain, so Stan is likely going to have some pretty significant mood swings. I think you need to be prepared for what to do in case of extreme sadness or anger so that you can protect yourself and the kids. I said, "You cannot be serious." Caught off guard, he asked, "I am serious, of course, but why do you say that?" Well, doctor, if you knew my life, you would know why that sounds like a really bad joke. Stan is already the most emotionally volatile man I know. Do you not feel safe at home, ma'am? It's not that kind of unsafe. I will be fine. I just don't understand God sometimes. Are you sure you'll be okay? It is safe to tell me if you do not feel like you will be safe with these new conditions. I'll figure it out. I always do. But there were many difficult and scary moments to come. Weeks with more rage than ever before, coupled with many irrational tears, sleepless nights, light and noise sensitivities, and irritability. I questioned Stan's sanity, but also began to question my own sanity and safety. Hiding in closets with little kids or sending them to play outside while I tried to calm Stan down. The constant tending of my husband, walking on eggshells, doesn't even begin to touch it. weeks of being at his beck and call, no matter how badly he treated me, is more like it. Trying to get him to do or not do what the doctor said, flare-ups that we would all pay the price for when he didn't comply with the treatments prescribed. It began to feel as if our entire marriage was under a microscope. All the little things we had struggled with were magnified times 100. These would go down as the darkest days of our marriage, and perhaps what changed everything forever. We never did get back to any sense of normalcy after this season. Did this final concussion change everything? Or did it just reveal what had been there all along? I began to search, trying everything to understand the painful drama in my marriage. Friends, Bible studies, magazine articles, books, counselors, online forums, you name it. Help me make sense of my life was my battle cry, day in and day out, for years. Social media was emerging, which included online forums. It was incredibly refreshing and made me breathe more fully every time I read a story, article, or post that sounded like my life. Suddenly, all the craziness was happening to other people too. Spouses were saying the exact same words, behaving in the exact same ways. Women were feeling all the same feelings I had my whole life. So maybe it wasn't the concussions? I would privately ask people if their spouse had concussions. Usually the answer was no. Why? One of the places of solace was a PTSD forum. Women, many who were military wives, dealing with the same attitudes and behaviors from their war vet husbands. This group led me to another forum, more specifically about PCS, or post-concussion syndrome. My new forum friends wanted their loved ones to be healed as much as I did mine. They were enduring like treatment or worse in their homes and marriages. We all needed our men to be healed, for that was the only way we could heal. Or so we told ourselves. My husband was so close to feedback from me that I could share none of what I was learning without meeting his defenses. He wasn't interested in healing because in his mind there was nothing wrong with him. No matter what I shared with love and concern, somehow I was wrong. I was trying to fix him, and he did not want to be fixed. Correction, he did not need fixed, according to him. Now, following the September 11th conversation at the pizza lunch, Stan had made a commitment that not only would he admit there was something wrong, but that he would go see the counselor of my choice, and he would do whatever this counselor decided he needed to do for however long he decided he needed to do it to save this marriage. If it was possible to save this marriage, he was going to do whatever it took to make that happen. I wanted to be cautiously optimistic, but the truth be told, I was just doing what I needed to do for me and going through the motions for him. I did not really believe it would be different this time. I was willing to be wrong, but he was going to have to fill these promises with something for some length of time. I would no longer accept empty ones. Chris recommended that Stan start by healing the trauma of his childhood and several key incidents in adulthood through EMDR, just as I expected he would. He felt that he needed to level the playing field. I had healed my childhood wounds through EMDR, and now Stan needed to do the same so that we could approach our marriage from a balanced place. However, Stan held one more looming concern, even if he were to heal his childhood issues: the concussions. Chris felt he needed to address the concerns about the possible lasting physiological and physical effects of 10 concussions. This would require an NPE, a neuropsychological examination, by a qualified neuropsychologist, Only with all childhood trauma resolved and any lingering concussion effects addressed could we potentially find success in marriage counseling. 1. EMDR. 2. NPE. 3. Marriage counseling. Stan was all in. The three phases of the counseling program took 9 months to unfold entirely. From September to June, I did the best I could to be all in, both in our relationship and in our home. There were highs and lows, but I was committed to giving Stan the chance to repair the damage done from 10 years of me healing while he refused. I knew I would win, come what may. This program would either resolve the issues that continued to persist, and I would finally be able to have the happily ever after I had longed for, or it would reveal that my happily ever after was in fact not possible in this relationship, and I would have the assurance to know I needed to move on. I already had God's release from my vows, so I was ready if and when this happened. But it was not something I could entirely embrace yet. Well, we're going to call it for there. We're approaching 50 minutes today, and we are not quite done with this chapter, but we will pick it up again next week at the bottom of page 141, and we will finish this chapter and maybe get into another one. I can't remember, but we do have 4 more weeks left of reading. And so we'll get through this book right at the end of this year. So it's working out perfectly timing-wise to get it all in this fall. And I am so glad you're meeting me here each week to hear my story. It means the world to me. And I really truly hope and pray that what you are getting from this book is confirmation of whatever it is that you're dealing with or struggling with or wherever your stuck places are, whether that's a covert narcissistic abuse relationship, or if it's something else entirely. I hope that you are gathering resources for understanding how you can make changes in your life. And if you haven't gotten that yet, you're about to begin to, because these last few parts of the book are all about applying the Pathway to Peace journaling method that I use to change everything in my life. And I know it's going to mean so much to you. I've had many, many people who have utilized this journaling method and have reported back to me that it has been life-changing. It's just incredible, and I feel so honored that God decided so many years ago to share this idea with me through Philippians 4, 6, and 7, and how it just jumped off the page at me and helped me to understand how to structure my journaling in a totally different way that really helped me to awaken to where I was stuck and how to get unstuck. So I know it's going to do the same for you, and I'm looking forward to sharing that with you over this next month or so. So thank you again for joining me here today, and I will see you here again next week for more Starting Over Stronger, finding a pathway out of codependency to create a new life of peace.